Okay, guys, excited to be here with y'all. Let me make a couple of quick announcements before I get started. Number one, I hadn't been here this summer, so I don't know how you're doing it. If I was supposed to prepare discussion questions for you, I failed. And so, table leaders, as I'm teaching, you might want to be jotting stuff down to have some discussion questions. But I know you got the catechism there you can use. The second thing is, I got a friend here that would like some prayer for healing. And so I've talked to a couple of you, but when I get done teaching, we break for discussion. If you're an elder and you'd like to break away, just step over to the chapel for a few minutes and pray with me for a friend for healing. Love to invite you. We got plenty of elders here. Everybody doesn't have to come, so if you need to leave your table, that's fine. But if a couple of you elders would like to walk over to the chapel with me, really appreciate that. Okay, so let's all open up to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, and we are going to talk about the seventh commandment this morning. All right. And let me say this by way of introduction. Eric actually talked to me, I guess, back near the beginning of the summer when he was first planning this and asked me if I had a preference. And part of it was my schedule. What week am I going to be in town? But also, which commandment would you want to teach? And, you know, I kind of thought and prayed and I chose this. And one of the reasons I chose this is because I'm a fellow struggler. Okay? I mean, there are some people that lust, adultery is not their main struggle, right? They got other struggles in life, but this is just not one of the main ones. And that's not me. For me, so I'm going to come up here, and everything I'm saying to you, I promise, I'm saying it to myself. I am not up here as a guy that has everything figured out, and this is not 100% in my rearview mirror like I wish that it was. This is still a very real fight for me. So I come to you this morning as a fellow struggler. You know, we get the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament, Exodus 20, Deuteronomy 5, the seventh commandment. It's very simple in one sense. Do not commit adultery. Well, we're going to look today at Matthew 5, where Jesus kind of gives us a little exposition of that commandment, and he certainly takes it a little bit deeper. Now, when it comes to sexuality, let's just be honest, Christians tend to get a pretty bad rap today in today's culture, do they not? Okay? That we're too harsh, that we're overwhelming, that we're too repressive, and we could go on and on and on. And there's a lot of Christians, or at least professing Christians, that would say, I believe in God, I believe in the Bible, I believe it's inerrant, but they don't even obey the sexual ethic, right? I mean, I got a friend, a guy that I used to mentor, and he's off in the business world now. He's newly married, and he started a Bible study, and it's he and his wife, and it's mainly kind of couple friends. And they're the only, I think, married couple in the Bible study, but there's a lot of people dating, a lot of people, you know, engaged even. And he's like, they're all not just sleeping together, they're living together. But they would all profess to be Christians. And he told me that, and I was like, I can't believe that. I was like, no, unfortunately, that's pretty common. Right? He's like, there's plenty of people who say, yeah, I take the Bible seriously, but they don't take the sexual act seriously. Not as seriously as Jesus did. And then there's some people on the other side that what they would say is, man, Christians take sex too serious, right? You make too big of a deal about it. I'll give you a story of a friend of mine. Okay. Grew up in a Southern Baptist home, conservative. Went to a Southern Baptist college. Got involved in a really conservative evangelical ministry. And he was doing discipleship groups and accountability groups and Bible studies and prayer studies. This is a smart guy. Loves to read, loves to study the Bible. Graduated, went to a good seminary, right? Conservative, evangelical, Bible-believing seminary. Got out, got a job as a youth pastor, trying to labor and love these kids and share the gospel and do the whole thing. But he and I were friends. About 30 years old, he's single, and he's like, you know what? I'm sick of this, man. I've been trying to believe this stuff and obey this stuff since I was 12 years old. Which is about the same time, you know, my sex drive kicked in. So for 18 years, I've been fighting all these raging hormones, trying to be a good Christian, but beating myself up all the time every time I look at pornography. I've tried to do it the right way. I'm not married. It doesn't seem right. I'm sick of it. And, you know, and what I appreciated at least about him is he didn't say, well, I've been studying the Bible and actually I see the Bible's okay with premarital sex. He didn't say that. He just said, I'm about to have an emotional breakdown. I can't take it anymore. I don't care. I'm going to start going out to the club, and I'm going to find somebody to sleep with. And he did. And they dated, and they started sleeping together. She got pregnant. And then he kind of thought, well, I guess we should get married. Again, he still had all this kind of conservative trappings. But she didn't want to get married. Parents don't want to get married. I mean, it was just a mess. And at some point, he kind of started taking some baby steps back towards Christianity. He and I were having a lot of conversations. And, you know, one thing he said, man, but just the biblical sexual ethic seems so overwhelming. It seems so unrealistic. How am I supposed to live with all these passions and desires and just do nothing with them? And I said, well, but the world standard doesn't work either. All the world wants to say is two consenting adults, as long as you have two consenting adults, you can do whatever the heck you want. I mean, that's a fair summary, right, of what the world says today. I guess you could have three or four, whatever. But consenting adults, you can do whatever you want. And my buddy, again, he's a smart guy. He's not a dummy. He said, well, what's wrong with that? He said, that sounds pretty good to me. And by this point, he had kind of wooed this girl in. They were engaged. They were actually about to get married. I said, well, just imagine you go ahead and you get married. She follows through with it. But then, a day, a week, a month, a year, a decade, whatever, after the wedding, she meets somebody else. And she and that guy, they're consenting adults. They want to sleep together. But you're not consenting. How's that going to make you feel? How's that going to make your kids feel? And he's like, you're right. That's a good point. Right? So the world's way doesn't work. And sometimes Christianity can seem overwhelming, but it is the right way. It is the best way. And there is a biblical, gracious way to understand it and apply it. And that's what we want to look at this morning. Okay? So we're going to look at this Matthew chapter 5 passage and just three quick points. The sin, the fight, and the results. The sin of lust, of heart adultery. The fight and the results. So let's talk about the sin first. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus, in a sense, expositing, right? It was like, we got this Olin guy coming to talk to us about do not commit adultery. That doesn't sound very good. But if you had Jesus saying, let me teach you about do not commit adultery. And this is what you got right here for a few verses. Matthew chapter 5, starting verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. Quoting the Old Testament. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Now, let's just take a few minutes and let's go deep on this. Because, again, some people more on the left would come to this and say, well, yes, if you're married and you make a marriage vow, you should not break that vow. Right? So if you're married, you should only have sex with your spouse. And if you're a single person, you certainly shouldn't have sex with somebody else's spouse. But, and listen, again, y'all, I'm going to say this, and some of y'all are going to be like, do people really believe that? I'm like, yeah. And I can introduce them to you if you want me to. They're like, but if you're single, you're not married, it's a free-for-all. You can do whatever you want. This is about the marriage vow. And it's like, that's not what Jesus is saying, okay? But there's some kind of left-leaning so-called Christians that would try to say that. But listen, don't pat yourself on the back too much if you're a hardcore conservative. Because sometimes the right wing can go so hardcore, they're like, you know what, we need to be more like the Taliban in America. And all the women, they just wear burqas down to their ankles. You know? I mean, if you just even glance at a woman's ankle, you're probably insane. Now, again, I don't think that's where most of us are living. But what I'm saying is you can take it too far in the wrong direction on either side. Okay? And as always, Jesus, the Bible, gives us a better way. Somebody smarter than me came up with this illustration, but it's so perfect. Fire is a wonderful gift, right? It's beautiful. It can warm you. It can warm your whole house in the right place, the right time. You can cook food over it. There's so much good. Fire is a powerful thing. In the right context, it can do wonderful stuff. In the oven, in the fireplace. But if fire gets out of the fireplace, into your house, into the den, into the living room, on the carpet, it can destroy your house. It can kill you. And that's a great picture of sex. Sex is a great thing. God is pro-sex. God invented sex. God liked sex. God likes the parts of your body that do sex. He invented the whole thing. He's for it. But he's just for it in the fireplace. And yes, biblically speaking, I mean, here's just a kind of a simplistic way to say it. When it comes to sex outside of marriage, the Bible is a hard no. It's just really clear. No. But it's important for us to say, once you're inside of marriage, it's a really strong yes. It's not kind of this like, oh, that's kind of weird and bad, but I guess you got to do it to procreate your race, so just make it quick and let's don't talk about it. That's not the Bible's mindset. I mean, have you read the book of Song of Solomon? I mean, part of me just wants to read it this morning and do my best to explain it, and I guarantee you we'd all be blushing, myself included. And that's God. He's for sex. He likes sex. He likes sex more than you do, more than I do. Cultivated in marriage. Now, okay, Jesus is saying, yeah, adultery is sin, but even heart adultery is sin. Now, this is an important thing to say because people can mess this up. Lust, we're going to explain even more about what we mean about that. We're defining the sin. Is not the exact same thing as adultery. It's not as bad. Right? I've heard people say that. Well, lust is exactly the same as adultery. It's just as bad. No, it's not. If your best friend came over and said, hey, I just need to let you know one time I lusted after your wife for 2 seconds. That's probably going to be a weird conversation. But let's just be honest. You'd be like, I like my wife. She's pretty attractive. I get it. You know, thanks for telling me. But okay, not the end of the world. If your best friend comes over and says, I just need to let you know I committed adultery with your wife one time. It's going to be a different conversation, is it not? Okay? Of course there's a difference. Jesus is not saying they're the exact same. What is he saying? He's saying heart adultery, lust, is real adultery in seed form. And don't play around with it. Because it can ruin your whole life. And God still hates it. I mean, just think about that conversation with your wife. If you went to your wife and said, honey, I just need to let you know I had an affair, that's probably going to be an explosive conversation. And it should be. If you went to your wife, and I'm not suggesting that you do this, and say, honey, I just need to let you know I lusted after a girl at the gym today for 2 seconds. I'm really sorry. She's probably going to say, okay, I don't like that. Probably wish you hadn't even told me. But I guess it could be worse. Please don't do it again. Right? And you're not going to say, oh, so you're fine if I lust after women. No, she still doesn't like it, but it's not the same. Now, I want us to try to define this really clearly, okay? Because here's the thing. What Jesus is doing when he says, hey, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. Because a lot of the Pharisees would have patted themselves on the back and said, never done that. Never done that, literally. And there's a lot of us in this room could pat ourselves on the back and say, never done that. But Jesus said, listen, if you even desire to sleep with a woman that's not your wife, that's sinful. And what's he doing? He's casting the net of conviction so far that it catches all of us. And obviously part of what he means, and certainly when you study the whole Bible in the context you see, is that anything that deviates from God's good standard of one man, one woman, married for life, that's the fireplace in which you can have a free-for-all with sex. Outside of that fireplace, anything that deviates from that is sinful. So yes, homosexuality, pornography, masturbation, bestiality, I mean, all sorts of weird stuff, you know, that in the Greek would have been under this kind of junk drawer term of porneia. It's all sinful. It's all bad. Now, a lot of you are probably aware, you know, there's a big debate that's been going on in the PCA, our denomination, Presbyterian Church in America, about homosexuality. And we should take a stand for the truth. We should be unapologetic. And our church and the denomination in general is doing a good job of that. But I just want us to be really honest with ourselves for a second. And I don't know all of you personally, but I think I know enough of you well enough to say this. That's not what most of us struggle with personally, right? I know real legitimate Christians that struggle with that struggle. But that's not where most of us are living. And there is a pharisaical danger for us to be way too quick to pat ourselves on the back. Well, I'm not gay. I don't even vote for people that believe in gay marriage. Gross, disgusting, can't understand it. Why? And to kind of give ourselves a heart pass when it comes to just checking out other women all the time. Laying in bed at night, just fantasizing about other women. And again, I'm not saying the two sins are exactly the same. Some sins are worse than others, and we need to say that. But I do think we need to spend more time repenting of our own sin, fighting our own sin, killing other sin, than attacking other people's sin. Got to do both to be a good Christian, but it's got to start with me, right? Make sense? Okay. So, again, I want us to be real clear on this. It's not wrong to notice and appreciate beauty. It's not. Let me go a step further, because I want us to find this as clearly as we can biblically. It's not even wrong to appreciate sexual beauty. Here's what I mean. Take some of you are like, whoa, well, that sounds starting to sound weird. Most of us have probably had the experience being at the beach, being at the gym, seeing a guy that's really good looking, right? Cut up. And we're like, that's a good looking dude, right? And there's not a homosexual thought or feeling in our body. We're just saying, I can see why ladies like that dude, right? We're appreciating the beauty and even maybe the sexual attractiveness, we might say. And most of us have probably had a thought with our mom, with our sister, with a daughter maybe, where we're like, she looks very, very attractive. I can see why guys would like her. And we say it in the most pure way. So here's what I'm trying to say. There is a pure way to appreciate somebody's beauty and even their sexual attractiveness. Does that make sense? And not cross the line into lust. But let's just be real honest with ourselves. At least I'm going to be real honest with myself. That line of I'm just appreciating their beauty and attractiveness. If it's outside of my family, it's about a 1 second line. If I appreciate it too much, I ain't just appreciating anymore. Right? I'm drinking it in. It becomes an evil desire. We got to be careful. Think about it this way, okay? Again, because I want us to have a really clear definition of what we're trying to fight here. So we don't beat ourselves up for stuff that's not sinfulness, because we're not after some kind of false condemnation. But neither do I want us to give us a loophole about what is sinfulness. Okay? Imagine a single guy, godly guy, godliest single guy you can imagine, okay, dating a godly young lady. And he's like, I love this girl. I want to marry her. Probably part of what he's saying is, I think she's physically attractive and I would like to have sex with her. And that's not sinful. That's part of the whole thing, right? I mean, don't answer this one out loud, but if sex hadn't been part of the package, how many of us would have gotten married? Right? That's part of what we're saying is, I think she's attractive, I'd like to marry her. But here's the godly way to do it. You say, but I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to touch her, and I'm going to try to keep my mind from even going there until we're married. I'm going to put a ring on her finger. I'm going to wait because that's the loving thing to do. I'm appreciating her. I'm desiring her one day, but there's a patience. Whereas lust would be like, I want her and I want her now. And if I can try to put my hands all over her body right now, I will. And if she's too godly and pure to let me do that, I'll just fantasize about it in my mind all the time. You see the difference? In a godly appreciation that's willing to wait, and the lust that says, forget God's standard. I want it now. It consumes. Okay. Here's my personal translation of what Jesus is saying here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 28. Okay? Anyone who looks at a woman to desire her, it's the intention. You're going to be walking down the street sometimes and see somebody and be like, oh my goodness. That's just normal. That first second. That's just temptation. That's not necessarily sinfulness. It's what do you do with the second thought? You got to look away. You be like, oh my goodness, God, I appreciate that beauty. And just let somebody else appreciate it now because I can't handle it. I'm looking away. Okay? Here's an old Reformed commentator, a guy named Matthew Poole. He says, takes pleasure in such thoughts, looks at a woman with such intent. In the heart, you secretly desire the thing. Right? I'm not supposed to have that, but I want it anyway. This has been part of the debate in the PCA right now. Even to desire something that God says don't desire that is sinful in and of itself. You realize that? Can't do that. A woman, not your wife. Here's my bottom line definition of lust. Okay, and again, this is something I've studied about a lot, thought a lot, not just academically because I'm writing papers on it, because I'm trying to fight it myself. Here's my best definition of the sin of lust, okay? Really, any kind of sexual sin. It's any way that you seek or you give sexual pleasure outside of marriage. Okay, so that can just be watching a movie. It's kind of risque. Technically no nudity, but if it's fueling the fires of your lust in your mind, you're kind of seeking some sexual pleasure, just with what you see in your eyes, what you hear them talk about, and what it leads you to think about by yourself, that's sin. Sexual sin is lust. Okay? Now, that's the sin. Hopefully we've defined it clearly enough. Now let's talk about the fight. The fight. Look at verse 29. if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than your whole body go into hell. This would be one of those passages that somebody like my friend I mentioned at the beginning would say, the Bible's too unrealistic. What does that mean? And listen, Jesus did not literally mean chop your hand off, chop your eye out. None of his disciples did it. And if he really had, he'd say, hey guys, why ain't y'all chopped any hands off yet? And let's just be honest. If you did pluck out your right eye and your right hand, I don't know about y'all, but you can still lust pretty good with your left eye. That's not what he's talking about. Listen to Matthew Henry. He says, if there were no other way, cut out the eye. But with God's grace, there are other ways. What is Jesus talking about here? He's talking about the intensity of the fight. I was talking to a group of college men last night and just kind of doing an overview of biblical masculinity. A lot of times you get asked to speak to just a men's group in college. It's just about like talk about lust and pornography and purity. But I kind of did, no, we're going to just do an overview of biblical masculinity. We're talking about work. We're talking about all different kinds of things, protecting and providing for women. But we had a Q&A time, and they could write their questions down, so it didn't have to be public. And one of the questions basically went like this. I've prayed the prayer. I believe in Jesus. I go to church. I go to Bible studies, but I'm still addicted to pornography. Am I a Christian? Now, I'm going to come back to that one in a minute. But then one of the guys that was kind of leading the Q&A said, and hey, let me ask a follow-up of them. Probably everybody in this room has looked at pornography at some point in their life. What do you do to fight it? And I'm in full-time college ministry with guys, so I get asked this question while I answer this question. So I knew what I was going to say, and I also know that probably no guy in the room is going to do what I say. Because you know what one of my things is? You're going to have to be so radical in shutting down your life technologically. Right? I'm like, I'm a 44-year-old man. I'm married to the love of my life. I'm more attracted to her today than I was the day I got married. And we got a happy, healthy marriage in every way. Not perfect, but we like each other. We're getting along, okay? And here's the thing. I've got a pretty tough porn blocker and reporting system on my phone, on my laptop, and she gets the reports. Not just another guy that'll be like, ah, no big deal, dude, I'm struggling too, right? Your wife gets the reports like, whoa, what was that? It keeps, and listen, I'm not saying everybody's got to do that. Some wives not going to handle that well. All the other stuff in our house, PlayStations, Xbox, I can't keep up. I was telling them last night, I hate the fact that if I go to buy a new TV right now, even you go to Walmart or something, they're going to be like, we got a smart TV for $200. I don't want a smart TV. I want a dumb TV. I don't want a TV that connects to everything out there. Why? Because I don't trust myself. So every time we get something, I'm like, what? You know, I don't call her wife. I call her Lena. Lena, you know, you set up the passwords, and I don't want them. So even my kids sometimes come to me like, Dad, I need the password for this. I'm like, I don't have it. Ask your mom. Why don't you have it, Dad? It's like, because I don't trust myself. And if you want to be serious about killing lust in your life, it's this kind of intensity. You have to cut some things out. I don't have that. Not on that social media. Don't do that. All this stuff blocked down. Now, again, are there some guys that say, I got access to everything and I don't struggle? Yeah. And in my experience, that's about 10% of humanity or less. But for most of us, we probably need some pretty ruthless measures in our life if we're going to be serious about fighting and killing this sin. Here's the Message translation, okay? I don't usually quote the Message, but I like this. You have to blind your right eye the moment you catch it in a leering look. I read this quote one time, and I can't even remember. I need to go back and find it, if it was John Stott or Sinclair Ferguson, but it was one of those guys. And he said, listen, what does it mean to fight sin, to hate sin, to kill sin? It means this. It's a ruthless rejection. The first instant that you're aware of a sinful thought or temptation. You don't toy around with it. John Piper, when he's talking about lust, he says, the thought comes in your mind, you got about 5 seconds. At best, you better get rid of it, you better replace it with something better, or you're going to be down the rabbit hole. And who knows when you'll be back. Listen, it's a little bit like this, guys. You know, I was hoping Westby or somebody would be here. Maybe, I don't know if
One of you guys have served in combat at some point. I'd like to talk to you afterwards. You know, I love watching war movies. I've never been in combat. But there's all these times where people are like throwing grenades, you know, and the grenades like come in the room and then they're like throwing it back out. Or they're kicking it out or something. I'm like, is that real? That doesn't seem real. Maybe. But I tell you what you never see, whether that's real or not, you never see somebody get the grenade and say, this is cool. This is fun. It's like a shiny object. Look at the shape of it. I've never seen a German grenade. You know? I wonder how long we can hang on to it before it blows up. There's this instantaneous, get it out! That ought to be the way we deal with lust, guys. TV show, a meme on your phone, whatever. Get away from it. Run away. Flee. Don't try to beat it. Okay? I had a seminary professor one time, and a lot of my seminary I would do distance, so I would like go to a certain town for a week or 2 weeks and kind of be there and concentrated. And so I was in this seminary class, and the first day we went up to the professor and said, hey, great teaching, love to take you to lunch, ask you some questions. He said, oh, yeah, sure. He said, can I borrow your phone? And he'd call my wife, tell her I'm not coming home today. Yeah. And then maybe by Thursday, we kind of did the same thing. Hey, man, take you to lunch again. He said, yeah, can I borrow your phone? And one of the guys kind of like, you ain't got a phone? Because the first time you just thought maybe his phone's broke or he forgot it. And he's like, I don't have a phone. Godly guy, probably in his 50s. Didn't ask him right then, but later, enough of his testimony came out. And I was like, I understand why he didn't have a phone. Professional man, 50 years old or older, wife, bunch of kids, living in a big city. And he's like, I don't have a flip phone. I don't have a phone, period. And that wasn't just because he's a low-tech guy. Right? It's because that had led him to bad places before. He's like, I can live without a phone. Gouge out your right eye. That's what it takes. Okay, I can't tell you how many guys. I was having lunch with a guy just a couple of days ago. I mean, I just know lots of guys that would say, I can't remember the last time I've been drunk. I don't get drunk. That's not my struggle. But I do tell you what, there are some times, if I maybe have two or three or four or something, I don't think I'm drunk, but it makes me a lot more prone to lust. Okay, I appreciate that honesty, but like, we've been seeing, like, listen, if four beers, you end up looking at porn every time you have four beers, this isn't hard. Quit having four beers. Cut it out. Do whatever it takes. Here's William Hendrickson. Take drastic action in getting rid of whatever in the natural course of events that will tempt you to sin. Temptation flung away immediately and decisively. Dilly-dallying is deadly. Halfway measures work havoc. Okay? The right eye, the right hand were typically the strongest. So Jesus is saying, be willing to lose some of the strongest parts of your life if that's what it takes to kill lust. Okay? And again, don't just respond in the moment. I'm already saying this, but part of it is know the patterns of how you sinned in the past. But listen, most of us, we get these ruts in our brain, especially when it comes to sexual temptation. And we're used to going down the same pattern, right? If I'm on a business trip, if my wife's out of town, if this, if that, know yourself, confess temptation, ask for prayer ahead of time, put things in the way. The sin, the fight, the result. This is where it really gets bad. This is one of the things that really blew my friend away that I was talking about earlier. He says, hey, Jesus says, if you don't do this, you're going to go to hell. Now, that sounds too hard, doesn't it? Again, here's John Piper. Love John Piper. He says, fight lust or you'll go to hell. Now, obviously, what that does not mean is that if you're a genuine Christian, you can lose your salvation. The whole Bible's against that. It's not what Jesus is teaching. But here's what it is saying. And it's not saying that true Christians never lust anymore. Okay? If that's what it means, I'm out. What it means is this. If you don't take lust seriously, and guys, really, you apply this to any sin, and you just kind of play with it, and you cultivate it, and you do it, and you persevere in it, eventually what you will do is you will prove yourself to be, just like my friend that I mentioned in the beginning, that you were never a real Christian, no matter what you said with your lips, no matter what prayer you prayed, that it wasn't real. that you didn't love Christ more than everything, but you love your sin. You've got to take this fight seriously. Again, here's Matthew Henry. He says, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically says, lust seems, I mean, just think about it. This command seems impossible, doesn't it? I mean, part of what we'll say is, Jesus, I don't know how it worked back then, but 21st century America, I don't know if you've been walking around, we got Victoria's Secret billboards and stuff now. How am I supposed to do this? And Matthew Henry says, Jesus knows how serious it is. So it's like he pulls out all the terrors to wake us up, to shake us. Say, you got to take this serious or this is where it will lead. Listen, the ultimate ground of my assurance, if I'm a genuine believer, is in Christ, Christ alone, His life, His death, His resurrection for me, His choice of me. But a secondary component of assurance of salvation is progress in the sanctification process. Do you understand what I mean by that? One of the best things you can do to help you grow in assurance of salvation is kill your sin. Fight your sin. Not perfectly, because none of us do it that way, but slowly but surely, two steps forward, one step back, you're making progress. You're putting it to death. Okay? Listen, the fires of lust untamed, if you just let them burn wild in your life, will lead eventually to the fires of hell. And in some sense, guys, just think about it. Lust is like a little foretaste of hell. Hell is the logical conclusion of lust. Because think about what lust is. It's self-centered. It's all about me. It's demanding. It's consuming. It's never enough, is it? I mean, let's just say, again, a bunch of white Southern conservative guys sitting around here. We struggle with lust, but we're like, I try to confine it to my wife. And what I mean by that is, I just take all my passions and I just direct them to her. In one sense, that's good. But even there, you can be overly demanding, overly self-centered, overly pressuring, where it's like, it's never enough, honey. More, more, more. Right? You can ruin a marriage that way if you just let all your desires go unbridled. It's consuming. It'll eat you up. And in a sense, guys, what is hell? Hell is demanding. It's never satisfied. It's consuming. It will burn you up for all eternity and never be satisfied. Now, love, on the other hand, true love, marital love, even sexual love, it's patient. It's gentle. It's not self-centered. It wants to serve. It wants to give more than it wants to get. It likes to get too, but it wants to give first, more. It wants to outgive the other, outserve the other. And if lust is like a little foretaste of hell, guys, true love is like a little foretaste of heaven. Right? Jonathan Edwards said, heaven is a world of love. Why? Because Christ is there. And Christ is a God of love. Let me just give a couple of really quick closing application thoughts and we're done. Okay? Three things. If you're not married and you're struggling with lust, one of the best things you can do is get married. So, you know, pray a lot, brush your hair, get a job, go on a date. Try to get married. Not a guarantee, but statistically, chances are pretty good. Right? Number two, if you are married and you still struggle with lust, try to make the most that you can of a good, godly, sacrificial, serving sex life in marriage. Not a selfish, demanding, consuming, but a one anothering servant. Sex life and marriage. Got questions about what that looks like? Jason will be happy to answer all your questions at the break. Okay? Number three, whether you are single or married, here's the real answer for all of us. Fall more in love with Jesus. Guys, listen. Pornography is easy, isn't it? Because it's instant gratification. Turn it on. Looks good. Feels good. Instant. Some type of instant pleasure. Pleasure in God is better and it's deeper, but it's much harder to come by, right? Because I got to read this ancient text that doesn't always make sense to me. And I got to think, and I might have to pull a commentary off the shelf, and I might have to ask somebody, and I got to think, and I got to pray, and I got to, God, make me love you more than I love the quick, instant pleasure of sex. But here's the key to that. the fires of hell that every single one of us deserve. For all of our sin. But if we just took all the other sins away and said, just for lust, you may be the purest dude in this room, but I know you're not 100% pure, right? We have all merited the fires of hell with the fires of lust in our mind and our hearts at times. But by His grace, we don't have to go there because the Lord Jesus Christ, who was 100% pure, who did live on this earth, who I don't know if you remember, but a large part of His ministry was to prostitutes. Any of you guys want to sign up for that ministry? Not me. I don't want random women washing my feet with their hair. And He was 100% pure in all of His thoughts, in all of His looks, in all of His interactions. But He got to the end of His life, and He went into the flames of hell, the wrath of God, for all those who would trust in Him. And His sacrificial love and blood, in a sense, extinguished the fires of God's wrath for all His people. He was willing to be consumed out of that sacrificial love He has for us. And there should be something in our hearts that says, I love Him, I worship Him, I'm in awe of Him, He's better. So even though those thoughts are pretty powerful, I'm going to turn away. It's not enough just to have a hard no towards lust. You've got to have a greater yes to a better pleasure, the pleasure of the love of Christ. Let me pray for us. Lord Jesus, we love You. We don't love You near enough, but we do love You by Your grace. And we're asking for more grace, for more faith, to see You more clearly, to love You, to appreciate Your beauty, the beauty of Your character, the beauty of Your sacrifice at deeper levels, so that when we see women, we can appreciate them in healthy ways, but then we can look at them with pure eyes and interact with them as made in Your image and not just an object to be consumed. We pray all this in Christ's name.